Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and each week on the show, we will talk about how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. In this episode, I talk with Heather Whalen, founder of Reviver Architecture and Development. With more than 30 years of experience, Heather has evolved into a trusted guide for her clients, helping them navigate each project with calm confidence. She listens closely to their deeper needs and grounds their aspirations in her hard-earned expertise. Often, Heather works with existing and historic buildings. She understands the importance of seeing both the potential in these properties and the pitfalls that can upset redevelopment. She uses her lived experience to help clients choose properties that align with their vision. I see Heather's practice as a barred owl, a bird known for its wisdom, quiet strength, and keen ability to listen to subtleties around it. Heather embodies that same awareness. She listens deeply, draws from her experience, and helps revive old spaces into meaningful new venues that reflect her clients' dreams. In this episode, we discuss how her thoughtful, steady approach and her quiet style of leadership allow her to guide complex redevelopment projects with clarity, confidence, and grace. Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and we discuss how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. Today, I am talking with Heather Whalen of Reviver, and we will talk about how she has developed this practice and leveraged her decade of career experience. I don't want to overestimate, but I don't want to underestimate, because you are coming into this solopreneur journey as a well-established architect, having led big project teams at a big firm, and now you are venturing out on your own. So welcome, Heather. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate you inviting me. I'm so excited to be here with you. And I'll just make a minor correction to what your intro said, which is that I've actually got about almost 30 years of experience in the industry. It's flown by. And yes, I do look younger than that experience indicates, but I have had experience in large firm environments for most of my career. So starting out on my own has been really fun, a complete change of pace in some ways, and in other ways, actually just a continuation of what I've always done. So
what an exciting place to be. And you're right, I didn't want to underestimate or overestimate your experience, because you're right, you do not look like a 30-year architect, but you definitely carry that experience with you and everything that I've experienced with women in architecture and everything we've done together. So tell us about starting Reviver. How long ago did you take flight? And what was the impetus that kind of inspired you to take this step?
Yeah, well, Reviver Architecture and Development is architecture and interior design firm. And my intent is to focus on small commercial projects, primarily in the Twin Cities, with an emphasis on hospitality design and adaptive reuse. So I founded Reviver 9 months ago in an effort to kind of broaden my practice a little bit. So you'll notice in the name, it says the word development. So in addition to the architecture and design portion of the business, I'm interested in expanding into real estate investing, primarily value add. And I think it's, the name Reviver is intended to convey my passion for breathing new life into projects, into existing buildings and spaces, whether reviving them to their full potential or, you know, converting them, transforming them for a new use. And then, you know, as we kind of talked about with my career history, the name has a double meaning. So it also hints at my personal journey and my search for a revived passion and recommitment to my architectural career. So maybe it's my midlife crisis. So instead of going on buying a sports car, I started an architecture firm. But but yeah, it's just kind of hoping to provide an opportunity for me to expand, you know, what I do on the day-to-day basis. You know, in addition to architectural and interior design, I'd like to also incorporate, you know, a new aspect, real estate investing.
That's exciting. And so with 30 years of practice going up the corporate ladder, you get to know your own strengths and your own weaknesses. What have you leveraged in starting your own firm? What sort of personal strengths, hopes, and dreams are you capturing with this venture?
As far as the project type I'd like to focus on, I've always found, the most interesting projects combine that aspect of the historic character and sort of that familiar with the surprising and the new whimsical creative, aspects of a renovation. So I've always loved that type of project. And I've gotten lots of experience working on those types of projects throughout my career. So my portfolio is kind of chock full of those types of projects. And then throughout your career, you get an opportunity to work in various different capacities as an architect. Maybe you start out doing more drafting and more, sketching and ideation, and then you start to understand the technical aspects of implementing these ideas. And then, potentially, depending on your strengths and skills, you evolve into, going out and winning the work and writing fee proposals and understanding the business side of how these companies work. So I've, had the benefit of working in all those capacities. And so I'm still doing that, but I instead of focusing on one lane or another, I'm back to doing all of it start to finish. So I think, my organizational strengths as a project manager and kind of as a firm leader are really key here. Also, the network, the community of people that I've met and worked with over the years are still valuable collaborators to me. So all of those experiences of working in the industry for this many years, I'm leveraging to start my own firm.
So how has the pace felt as you've transitioned from working for someone else and now you get to define what you are doing? I feel like when I started 5 years ago, I am in a different stage of my career. I'm just figuring things out, feeling things out. Whereas you're starting with this strong purpose and a defined vision. And I think it's got a lot of structure to the projects you're taking on and the relationships you're pursuing. I'm just curious what it's like to be taking off with that kind of structure.
Yeah, I think initially starting my business, I had a plan that I would maybe work 50% of my time in architecture and design and 50% in pursuing real estate investing opportunities. And, in the first couple of months of the business, in the infancy stage, I was thinking about the brand and kind of, the types of projects I'd like to work on and the types of projects I'd like to invest in. So, those first couple of months, I mostly was my own IT manager and kind of working on my website and kind of understanding social media and the branding ideas behind Reviver. And then just kind of continuing conversations with everyone in my network. And as project opportunities started to crop up, depending on what I thought that I could take on right away, I would do those projects. And then others, I might say, let's revisit this scale of a project for me in the next couple of months. So I think as the brand was evolving in my mind, I started to kind of work on whatever projects kind of cropped up. And I loved that flexibility that I have as a solopreneur of saying yes to things that are something I've never done before, or, I didn't even know this type of project existed. So I loved that learning and the challenge of those new adventures and being able to roll with it. I think I've been a little distracted from the mission at hand by meeting new people and making new connections and finding new opportunities and just kind of saying yes to what felt right at the time. So I think, over the last 9 months, I've understood my own workload capacity and kind of my own pace and what I'm able to take on. And so I've, been looking to take on larger projects and more of the standard approach of projects, restaurant, hospitality things that I that fit really well with the Reviver brand. So I've been busier than I thought I would, and it's been more design focused. I haven't really leaned into the real estate investing side. as much as I thought I would initially. That's still out there. It's still part of the long-range vision of Reviver. But for now, I'm kind of like leaning into the opportunities that present themselves and getting excited about that piece.
I appreciate that you've got that vision, but you've been flexible as things have come up and adapting to what's in front of you. Whereas like the developing side, knowing very little about it, it almost seems like that's a wait for it sort of opportunity where you're building these long-term connections and networking in these deeper levels with things that may not pan out for, I don't know, a year, 5 years, 10 years. And it's about having those conversations early on and seeking those relationships out. So very dual purpose, but making sure that you're doing work that's sustaining your firm right now by taking on these design opportunities is a good balance to have.
Yeah, I think there's a steeper learning curve for me on the real estate side than there is for me on the architecture side. So, you know, just kind of hitting the ground running, I wanted to take the opportunities where I knew I had a lot of experience and a comfort level that I could act on immediately. And, you know, just sort of, it is the long game, real estate investing. And, you know, I still am defining what my vision is for that side of the business. You know, initially I thought maybe I'll flip a house. That would be really fun. And so that was kind of, you know, the first sort of dipping my toe in the water, because that's something that we can all relate to. But with my experience in commercial architecture, it may actually be a better fit for me to start with a small commercial project. So that's sort of TBD. And as I mentioned to you before, I might be a different bird when that side of the business kicks in than I am right now.
It's fun to think about and good to think about our businesses adapting and growing over time. You mentioned that you had worked on your business plan over the last 9 months. Can you tell me what 3 words describe your firm's unique approach?
Yeah. So the 3 words that I thought explained a little bit about my journey and the evolution of my vision for Reviver were adaptive, you know, looking for ways to repurpose existing spaces creatively, and also adapting my own career to a new pace. Intentional. So I think all these words sort of have dual meaning, but intentional is from a project standpoint is that, you know, I want to be really thoughtful in the during the design process and create environments that are experience rich. And, you know, every decision is thoughtfully considered. So, but also intentional about the way that I approach my practice, leaving no exciting opportunity, no stone unturned. So the 3rd word I selected was aspirational. And so I think not only does that word relate to the project type that I like to work on, you know, thinking about the existing bones and the infrastructure and what can it become, that's very aspirational. And how can it really contribute to the community and provide a great experience for its guests in the future? But that word aspirational also applies to my own career trajectory. You know, just taking the wonderful experiences I've had in a large firm environment and transitioning that, and what can it become in the future? The name Reviver is intended to be sort of disconnected from Heather Whalen, right? I'm the one out front to start this firm, but I'm hoping that Reviver, you know, has a life beyond me. And whether it's, you know, my daughter, or whether it's future generations, or whether it's, you know, staff that eventually come on and join my team that want to kind of take the baton and run with it. I just wanted to create a brand that would, you know, include my family, my husband, my daughter, and then also, you know, potential future collaborators. So trying to set up something that, you know, in my aspiration can outlive me.
And I wonder if that's a personality thing, to want to live with legacy. That's sometimes how it's put, that you're thinking beyond just what you're doing now and thinking to what your motions are leading towards in a bigger sense. And that's kind of the fun aspect of flying, is having that long-term vision ahead of you and being flexible enough to kind of dive into the weeds, but also get a good glance at what's coming up ahead.
Yeah, I love that variety of being a solopreneur. You know, one day I'm, pouring over carpet options and then maybe detailing some millwork. But then the next day I'm meeting with a potential new client, walking a space, you know, talking about the potential of that space for the new use. And then the next day I'm doing in-depth code research and working through the existing building, the conservation code, and understanding, you know, does the client need to sprinkle this building? So there's a huge variety, and I love all of those pieces.
It does keep work refreshing to keep changing up the work each day. Mm-hmm. Well, let's dive into that client type a little bit more. I know you've said commercial, tenant, retrofits, sometimes existing historic buildings, but more specifically, there's a lot of businesses out there. There's a lot of commercial spaces. How do you start to define who you pair well with as a client and a project type?
Yeah, I think my experience has primarily been in the hospitality space, but that hospitality ethos applies to lots of different building types. So I think it can be broad in that sense, but my expertise is primarily in food and beverage venues. So, you know, these spaces they're a machine, they're working spaces. They have financial goals, they have volume goals, they have pro forma goals, they have functional requirements, they have code requirements. So, you know, and there's a lot of technical requirements, you know, engineering aspects that need to be fully weighed. So in addition, these projects require sometimes very tight design timelines and construction timelines and very tight budgets. So the type of client that I most enjoy working with are people that really value all of these aspects of expertise being brought to the table. So sometimes they've never designed a restaurant. They've never owned a restaurant. They're new to the industry. So it allows me to help educate them, guide them and create a seamless experience. I sometimes think that the experience, the process is as important as the outcome. I think that certainly how well the process goes plays into a great outcome. But I think developing that trust and the sort of relationship that that a new client can feel they're in good hands. So those are the type of clients and projects that I gravitate toward most.
I appreciate that it is that pairing of you've got this deep experience in the complexity of kitchens, let alone having a commercial kitchen in a space. But that's not what people talk about with restaurants. That's the logistics. That's the under the wraps, what you've just got to know and figure out. Same with the code reviews. So you're operating on this dual level where so much of the work you're doing is under the surface. Like 90% of it is just stuff that's logistics that you've got to figure out. And so some of these, I have not worked with many restaurateurs, but there is a persona implied with some of these that they've got that vision, they've got that aspiration. That yes, many of them do, and the successful ones do have a handle on the economics and the logistics, but there's also a part of the conversation you've got to have with them about that design and that hospitality aspect so that that's the branding, that's the vision of the restaurant. And wow, that sounds a lot like it reflects your firm. You've got all this experience that's in the wings that you can delve into and reference. But right now you're branding Reviver and you're developing Reviver to have this story that appeals, that revives, that it attracts new life and really invigorates new spaces. So I think that's a fun, I don't know, some architects seem to reflect their clients. And I don't know if you've seen that a lot, but it seems true here.
Well, I think understanding that brand is really critical in creating a good design story for a food and beverage venue, for a restaurant, is important. And it translates into the way I approached designing Reviver as a firm. So I think maybe other firms are less focused on the brand than Reviver is or than I have been. Because I do think with architectural and interior design, creating that story up front is essential to the authenticity of the design and the experience. So having that vision, I love working with chefs that are very visionary and really creative. And I think that we have that synergy in that early stages of just kind of bouncing ideas off each other. And I think that collaboration is really inspiring for us and hopefully for them too. So I think starting with that process where everything's loose, you have very few constraints that are limiting you, you know, you just come out of the gate with, you know, shooting for the ideal. And then you think about how all those other aspects play into it without diminishing that experience. So kind of like you were saying, some of those behind the scenes things like the code review, the functionality of the space, the way, you know, where does the trash get taken out? Where do the deliveries come in? All those aspects, you know, if I do my job successfully, they're not even a thought as you're experiencing the space. If you're, you know, dining in a restaurant, you're thinking about all the details that you're seeing around you, and how that underscores the amazing menu and the delicious food and the whole experience.
And there are so many logistics with starting your own business that are taking out the trash that you don't really want to talk about your accountant or your lawyer conversations, or there's so much that we have to focus on for a time. But if we've made smart decisions, then hopefully they just are established and we can focus on the fun. I'm really interested in hearing a little bit more about the design process for branding, because you said you've gone through this with restaurateurs, you've gone through this for your own firm. The sky's the limit when you're designing. You can ask any questions, any answer could be right, but there's something that happens in this line of questioning where you feel like something resonates, where something starts to take hold. What are some of the things you do in your process to find those resonances, or what's the true nugget of a design idea that's going to hold together for these restaurants or for Reviver?
Yeah, for a hospitality space, it's different. Every project is different and unique, and that's the intent. So we may have a process. I might follow a similar process or a similar approach on each project, but yeah, the inspiration sources are completely different from one to the next. So starting with the client, of course, and understanding what their goals are, you know, what experience are they creating? With the case of a restaurant, what type of food are they crafting? You know, what aspects of themselves are they putting into this labor of love this journey that they're on? And how can I support that? And how can I help manifest that into a physical space? So a lot of the inspiration comes from what their goals are and what their strengths and skills are. So, as you know, culinary skills, also just entertaining skills and understanding what the experience would be like. So, how important is lighting to them? How important is flow? You know, what type of experience do they want to have? How important are acoustics to them? Talking through all these things help us to identify the constraints that really push that design. So, definitely not the least, one of the most important things is the space that they go into and the existing architectural context. So if we find a building with a really amazing story, or if it is a change of use or adapted reuse, you know, if it was previously a church and now it's going to be a restaurant, what can we do to, you know, maybe provide a tongue-in-cheek experience or a little hidden secret moment where while you're dining, you think, huh, that looks like, you know, it used to be the pulpit, or, you know, I think, or, you know, maybe this, the wood that's here, it has been remilled from some of the pews, you know? So I think those types of surprises that reveal themselves during the dining experience are things that we think about during the design process to help layer in the rich story and aspects of being in the space. So, and that has a lot to do with the brand of the venue. So I think those types of project approaches have translated into the design of Reviver as a brand.
And I love how it's something you can navigate them through as looking at that architectural space and helping them find the right fit. Do you ever have to tell a client that no, this space or the barriers to this space are just going to be insurmountable or so costly? How do you approach that challenge?
Yeah, that is a challenge. And I think that's one reason why I love to get involved early. As a client is, dating prospective spaces, they're walking through and they see things that they really like. And then I'm looking at all the potential from a design standpoint, but I'm also thinking, how do we get the kitchen exhaust hood routed out of this building in a responsible and aesthetically pleasing way? And, thinking about what's already in a space and what can be leveraged to reduce that initial build out cost. Those kind of things I love being able to weigh in on early so that if it's not the right space for a client, if those barriers to entry are going to be cost prohibitive, it's bad news, but it's better to know early than later. So I've definitely had projects where a client has purchased a building. One time a client purchased an office building and wanted to convert it into a church. And, they already owned the building and, the church owned the building. So in that case, we worked very hard to understand the code requirements and see how they could actually accomplish this conversion without breaking the bank. Because sprinklers were added, elevator was added. These are costly items. So, if I can be there early on and say, this space is beautiful, but you don't need an elevator. There's already one on property. This space is also awesome and it is a great location, but you're going to have to factor in the cost of that elevator early. And sometimes spending money on those infrastructure, those essentials, takes away from the amount of money that you're able to invest in that guest experience. So those are all things that, clients weigh. I did recently evaluate a space for a new use for a client and said, I've spent enough time to know that this is going to require sprinklers. Sprinklers are an important safety item, but they can be costly. So if you don't decide to change the use of this space, you're fine without them. You can continue, occupying the building and using it for its current purpose. So I think after knowing that, I think the client said, I think this is a business decision. This isn't the right space to be converting. It's not going to pay for itself. The ROI is not there. So I think, even though I really love the design aspect and I love to build that initial, relationship basis on the creative, you really have to also encourage the client to be thinking about those budgetary items. So that if this isn't the right space for them, they're not hamstrung by already going too far down the road and then having to make it work and make sacrifices in other areas to do so. So yeah, it can be challenging, but hopefully my experience over the years can help me to advise people appropriately early on.
And I hope your clients are seeing that wisdom that you're bringing to the experience as well. Just to switch gears, you've got this client and these projects. How are you finding new clients and new projects? Are you building off of relationships you've had in the past? And what does that outreach look like when you've changed so much? You're not necessarily the person they knew before in like the firm situation, or you might be doing different things. So how are you having that conversation maybe with existing relationships, or how are you creating new client relationships to pursue work?
In my previous role, I did a lot of marketing. And so in addition to working on all these fun projects, I was also building relationships in the community. And so those relationships are still intact. And honestly, I'm doing a lot of the same work that I was previously doing in a large firm setting. I think this actually is a better fit for me to be working with clients as a small firm owner than to be pursuing these types of small projects as a portion of a large firm. I think, you know, I have a little bit more flexibility as far as my fee structure and how much time I can invest in a project. I don't have sort of peripheral responsibilities. I can focus on the projects. So some of my clients have just come from past relationships, but in the last 9 months, I've met several other new people that I didn't know before. And they're, I think there's just like an excitement around entrepreneurship that I've been, you know, finding and hearing from people. So I've had, you know, a lot of new project opportunities come from these new relationships. So, and as I mentioned, you know, maybe I haven't, you know, made the effort to seek out as many clients. I think people that have come to me have been really, have brought really interesting, challenging projects and kind of been a good fit. So I've really leaned into that flexibility of being able to say yes to what I want to try. And so that's kind of the path I'm on right now. I think eventually, you know, I do have one project that's come from a past client and they understand my capabilities. So I anticipate in the future, more of my project work and client referrals will come from, you know, those avenues. So yeah, referrals and collaborative partners that bring me into a project, I think is probably going to be the main reason, the main way that I meet new clients. I do have a portfolio that I hope they check out and they, you know, so when I meet a new client, they can sort of vet my experience based on that, what they're able to see on the website and on social media. So that's kind of where the brand communication comes into play, hoping to kind of express the type of projects that I'm best suited for. And maybe we end up with a closer fit, the right clients come to me. And that is really kind of the future plan for marketing for Reviver.
I like it. Well, Heather, for a bird, I can't help but see you as a bit of an owl in that you are...
I love owls. That's awesome. I'm a Raptor fan, so.
Nice. There's a depth of experience, and owls are often envisioned as these guides. And when I hear you describe the way that you guide your clients through these processes, it's almost a quiet wisdom. It's not you're spouting facts at them and telling them everything. You are there, you're listening, and you're speaking up when you can guide them. And so it's that expert guide, that expert Yoda. That's their guru. You're with them through the process, but it's in a confident and quiet way that is just really reassuring. It also reminds me a lot of how you've done this quiet networking, not secretive, but just there is a listening that happens. There's this long-term establishment of relationships that you have going. And I think that kind of reflects like you're not actively hunting. You're not one of those falcons or peregrine falcon or a hawk out there on the telephone pole waiting to attack, but you're listening for those opportunities and you've got this network that you've developed and you've grown over time. Specifically, I think you're a barred owl.
Mm.
It's funny, their distinctive call sounds like, who cooks for
who
you?
Who cooks for you?
Yeah. I can't believe you knew that. That's so funny.
I told you I'm a Raptor fan.
I love it. I love it.
That's hilarious. I can't wait to tell my husband and daughter because they're going to be, they love barred owls too. So.
Oh, seriously? That's awesome. Well, they specifically are adaptable because they do like the forest, but they've adapted to these urban environments. And that's specifically where you seem to be adapting in the Twin Cities, and they favor large trees. So that's the old oaks, and you're going towards those old buildings and reviving them and trying to bring life back into them.
Oh, I love it. I also like to think I can see around corners and I have that night vision, right? But it. So yeah, I love this analogy. I'm going to lean into it a little bit more, Katie. I have to do my own research and just refresh my memory on all the characteristics of the barn owl. I know we have one in kind of the woods behind our house. So every once in a while, we hear the who cooks for you outside. So
that's amazing.
When we see an owl, that's really exciting because I do think that they are pretty well hidden in the trees. So they're doing their thing. They may not always be out front and overt. So I wonder if that kind of is also
architects.
The way I roll.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Architects. Yeah. We're not at the front cutting ribbons of restaurants, but boy, are we there present during the whole process. I think it's interesting. I just read that owls, their eyes don't move. They've got straight vision. And so that's like having your straight plan, but you're flexible enough to apply that in any direction. This 270 degree flexibility, you can apply this process, but it's a straight shooting process, going straight to that long-term vision for each of your clients and for your firm as well. That's kind of fun too.
I love that. That's cool. Yeah.
Well, cool. Oh, I'm glad we landed on a good one.
Well, it's funny because, you've known me for a while and just throughout our conversations in the past, you know, you've probably thought of me as a different type of bird every time we talk. And, you know, maybe if we did this podcast again in a year, you know, I'd have at least a whole year of Reviver under my belt. And I might have some things that have evolved in my approach, and maybe a different bird would be some strengths I'm developing, right? But I do like the barn owl for where I'm at right now in my journey.
Yeah, there's some architects that really benefit from showing off their style, but it's more about your process when I talk with you. You're not too flashy with it. You have a fantastic portfolio of beautiful work, but that's not really what you're leveraging when you're talking with clients. And I think that's where that difference is, that if you did get more showy with your colors, we would be switching it out. Or if you got more aggressive with attacking certain RFPs or certain client types, we would be switching to a different bird. But for now, this seems like an interesting fit for where you are in your process. Very fun.
Well, that's fun. Thanks, Katie. I appreciate that commentary. And you're sort of, you know, you're one step removed. I'm in my head a lot. So I love to hear kind of what your thoughts are on the way I come across. So thank you.
Well, and you've been a wise one in my life as well. And that's been fun to know you over the years. And it's so exciting to see where this is going because, again, I see so much potential in architects taking off and starting their own firms and finding these niches. And just able to serve a broader clientele. There's just not enough architects involved in these projects. And so if we can reduce some of those barriers and just get more good design out there to help people with their projects, I just think there's more good in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think maybe it's just that I am starting my own business. I'm hearing about others that are starting their own, and I'm just seeing it more and more. And, you know, just the nature of this podcast, I think will be really helpful for people. And it just is a commentary on how things are changing a little bit. And with the gig economy, a lot of people are looking for ways that they can be flexible in their employment status and work remote and collaborate with outsiders kind of on a project by project basis versus, you know, having all that infrastructure set up and sort of a specific way of doing things. So yeah, I think just more and more people are going to be embracing this lifestyle and this type of a practice. So you got your work cut out for you, Katie.
I'm just shocked at how different everyone's practice is. I love it. I love the diversity of it. It really reflects the people. It means there's not just one mold. It means you don't have the excuse of saying, well, that works for so-and-so, but boy, I could never do that. Well, then shape a different business, make it different, make it work for you. And I think that's what you're really doing with this practice.
I agree. It's been exciting, quite an adventure.
I love it. Well, Heather, where can people learn about your adventure? Where can they find you? How are you sharing your story?
So I'm still continuing to evolve my visual communications, but I do have a website. It's reviver.design. So it showcases some of my past work while at my previous firm. As I'm completing new projects under the Reviver umbrella, then I'll be updating that with current project photography. My daughter, as a 17-year-old, is really excited about helping me with Instagram. So it's been a really fun opportunity to collaborate together. So Reviver has an Instagram. And I do have a LinkedIn that I haven't really spent a lot of time developing, but my own personal LinkedIn is out there, Heather Whalen. So there's a lot of information about my experience there and my contacts, my network. So.
And it looks like your Instagram is reviver.design.
Yes. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, cool. Any last advice that you would like to share with someone, or advice you wish you had been given when you started this journey?
I think, you know, if you have an inkling to do your own thing, or you feel like there are aspects of a broader career that you aren't getting a chance to experiment with, I would say embrace it and do it. I did wait until I felt like I was ready. But I do think, you know, like you, Katie, and others, you know, you get a certain level of experience, and then you develop that experience on your own as well. So don't wait, I guess, is what I would say. And life is too short, and do what you love. And if it means like experimenting, bridges are never burned. You can, you know, always go work in a firm again, or potentially go back to the firm that you loved and worked in for many years. And so I think there shouldn't be as much risk as people put on it. It's not as scary as it seems, and just try it.
And returning to a firm is not a failure. It's just a different phase, and you are definitely a different person from having grown and tested yourself on your own. At least that's how I've felt in going out. And you're not alone. You may be doing it all, but you're definitely not alone, and you don't have to do it all if you build those relationships and collaborate.
One more little side note for advice. I have connected with a couple of other colleagues that started businesses around the same time as me. And we've been getting together regularly, like a bi-weekly coffee. And it's really helpful for those things that are behind the scenes, like who's your accountant? Who do you have for IT support? You know, these types of things. But it's also like we can celebrate the wins, the little wins with each other. And we all understand the expectations when you start a business, that, you know, you've got lofty goals, but it takes, sometimes they're longer term and they take a while to achieve. So it's really great to have that tribe of people to kind of get together with and support and encourage each other. So that's another bit of advice that's been helpful to me.
I love it. And find your flock.
Find your flock. Exactly.
There's more out there. I love it. Well, thank you, Heather. This has been a delightful conversation, hearing about Reviver and all the wonderful things you're doing and the thoughtfulness behind it.
Thank you, Katie.
Heather Whalen started Reviver to revive her passion for serving clients and renew her energy for the work she cared about most. Her practice reflects the qualities of a barred owl: quiet awareness paired with steady action. A barred owl doesn't blindly attack, although in the darkness it may seem blind. An owl waits. It listens. Then, when it understands enough to locate its prey, it swoops in with assurance because it is guided by a depth of experience. And for Heather, that is how she has earned the long-term trust of her clients. And there are three key takeaways from a barred owl type practice. First is awareness. Owls are known for their deliberate awareness. They don't rush into flight. They study their surroundings, being mindful of what they are perceiving. Heather brings that same awareness to her firm. She intentionally waited to start her own business until she had the experience, the confidence, and the clarity to serve clients at a very high level. That time spent observing the industry trends, learning from past projects, and navigating complex redevelopments created a strong foundation for her consulting practice. She was able to have a strong launch because of decades of wisdom. And she applies that to her client relationships, becoming their trusted guide, their go-to guru for redeveloping existing infrastructure. But the best gurus don't lecture their clients. True wisdom stems from listening, which brings us to our second takeaway. Just listen. Like a barred owl listening for squeaking mice before it hunts, the faintest movement in the dark can be perceived long before an owl ever takes flight. Heather practices architecture the same way. She doesn't walk into a meeting with a predetermined agenda. She walks in with curiosity and a willingness to ask the right questions. She listens to her clients' deeper concerns, their unspoken fears, and their hidden priorities. She pays attention to the phrasing they use, not just the content. Because the nuance in their words often reveals more than any programmatic checklist could. It's a powerful reminder that effective design begins with listening. Listening that is patient, open, and inquisitive. This doesn't mean Heather doesn't have a desired outcome for her client meetings. You shouldn't have a meeting with a client if you don't have a purpose in mind. Our job as the guide, as an architect, is to bring the client through the long and arduous design process, one meeting at a time. But a leader who listens doesn't predetermine the answers to the questions. When you drop your assumptions and let clients describe their needs in their own language, you uncover truths that shape a better, more meaningful project. Owls do not command attention, yet they have a strong presence. And that same quiet strength is ubiquitous to Heather's leadership style. And that's our final point, quiet strength. An owl exhibits that steady and confident style of leadership, just like Heather. Heather leads decisively in her projects, her volunteer work, and her family. Her leadership isn't shaped by charisma or bravado, although she is very engaging. It's shaped by clarity, by showing up, by knowing when to speak and when to let others speak first. This aligns closely with the leadership described in Good to Great by Jim Collins. He describes a level 5 leader who isn't loud, but deep. A leader who exhibits deep humility and fierce personal will. They're not flashy. They're not fueled by ego. They guide their organizations towards success with a steady, unwavering commitment to doing what's right. Like a barred owl, Heather doesn't need to be front and center to influence her surroundings. She listens first, she observes patiently, and then she steps in with precision, clarity, and conviction. In essence, this describes Jim Collins' level 5 leader, having humility, acting with resolve, bearing responsibility, and showing up with consistency. And here's the deeper truth from Good to Great that Heather fully embodies. That quiet leadership often outperforms loud leadership. It creates healthier projects, stronger relationships, and a practice built not on force, but on trust. Heather guides her clients through complicated redevelopment work, like a barred owl navigating the dark. She's steady, perceptive, and unshaking. Her leadership is not about being the loudest voice, but the clearest. And that is the kind of leadership that turns a good solopreneur into a great business. Heather's story is a reminder that your greatest impact doesn't come from volume, but from vision. Lead with awareness, listen with intention, and act with quiet resolve. When you cultivate those qualities, you don't just build projects, you build trust. Let the barred owl be a reminder to you to lead with awareness, guide with wisdom, and glide through your practice with unwavering grace. Season 2 of the Flying Solo podcast is sponsored by the Minnesota Architectural Foundation, whose mission is to invest in excellence, leadership, discovery, and equity within the profession of architecture. To join the Flying Solo movement, visit the website flyingsolo.live, that's flyingsolo.live, for links to our Instagram, Substack, and the Wingbeat newsletter, a weekly dose of birdspiration and practical tips to help you grow your business and your confidence as a solopreneur architect. While you're there, take the bird quiz to discover which bird best matches your solopreneur style. For even more resources and encouragement, you can find all the Flying Solo episodes on the Gable Media platform at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com, the premier destination for podcasts about architecture and design. And if you're looking for community, connection, and real conversations, check out the Entre Architect Network at entrearchitect.com. There's a link in the show notes. Whether you join one of their masterclasses or the free Facebook group, you'll find a community of small firm architects sharing ideas, challenges, and wins. proving that while we may work solo, we're never alone. As Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architects, says, it's all about doing better practice and better work every day. Thank you for listening to Flying Solo. I'm Katie Kangas, and my hope is to empower you, aspiring architects and creative entrepreneurs, to soar to new heights and embrace the freedom of flying solo.